Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Belief, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Bucks, Suns, and Knicks. And I'm joined alongside Bruce Bernstein, our four-time Emmy Award winner, who spent more than three decades at ESPN producing NBA shows, SportsCenter, and soaking up knowledge from the best hoop analysts in the business. We're, of course, also joined by two-time Emmy Award winner, Michael World B. Freer, who is a senior writer at Stat Factor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. And tonight, we've got a special guest returning to the show, Steve Bulpret, who is a veteran sports reporter covering the Boston Celtics and the NBA for Heavy.com. This is episode number 101, and we're transitioning back to jersey number one. So this is the Tracy McGrady episode, as T-Mac wore number one for all but one season of his NBA career. In 2010, as a member of the Houston Rockets, the Hall of Famer switched to jersey number three to raise awareness for his humanitarian efforts in Darfur. Before we get to tonight's show, just a quick reminder, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And tonight, Bruce, I'll let you start us off by introducing and welcoming back our guest here tonight.
Thanks, Ross. As you mentioned, our special guest this week is making his return to the show after first appearing back in March of 2023. He is the one and only Steve Bulpret of Heavy.com, who was the Celtics beat writer for the Boston Herald from what year, Steve?
1985, but I was only 7 years old then.
Nice.
He covered Larry Bird and all those folks and everyone since. He's one of the three greatest Greek natives of Massachusetts. I have him at number two, but well ahead of number three, Brockton native, the late Chris Tsiganis, owner of Christo's in Brockton, known far and wide as the Greek Salad King. But Steve trails only one, the Golden Greek, Harry Aganis. So welcome back, Steve.
Harry went to my church. I've played in the Harry Aganis Invitational Basketball Tournament. He was a contemporary of my family, so they all knew him. He lived on 18 Water Hill Street. My parents were around the corner. My family was around the corner on Flint Street. This is all very key Lynn, Massachusetts knowledge that I'm sure everybody will be paused now. They want to get their pens out and write this stuff down.
Absolutely. Of course, our favorite Greek isn't from Massachusetts. I mean, that would be Giannis Antetokounmpo. You might have heard of him. But anyway, let's just jump right in. Ross, why don't you get us started?
Happy Easter for me yesterday.
Happy Eastern Orthodox Easter. Day late.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for
the Eastern Orthodox part. I mean, you know, it's pretty good. Go ahead, Ross.
Yeah, Steve, thanks so much for joining us here. Of course, we just got done watching quite a dogfight at Madison Square Garden between the Indiana Pacers and New York Knicks. The Knicks pulled out a tight win, 121-117. Obviously, a lot of action, including some officiating down the stretch there. Just wanted to kind of get roll things out here talking about that series and get your initial thoughts on game one.
Well, I guess I'm kind of betting that the Pacers wish the title of this podcast was 44 minutes.
The
concern I had I think this is a series for the Pacers. It should be theirs to get. My concern was that, they can clearly beat the Knicks if it's an up and down game. You know, if they can get there, use their depth and all those things, and, it'll show up during the series. My concern for the Pacers was if they get caught in a possession-for-possession game, then the Knicks are better equipped at that because they've been doing that all year. So, and that's what we saw tonight. It got into one of those situations. Dante DiVincenzo gets left open for a three, and there's your fulcrum, there's your delta in the the way that it went down the stretch.
Yeah, and talking about kind of just a possession by possession game, I don't know about you, but I was quite surprised at how frequent the Knicks turn the ball over here tonight. Is that something you think we'll continue to see in this series, or do you think that's something they can clean up and can definitely take better care of the ball behind the play of Jalen Brunson and kind of settle down? Because I felt like, as you mentioned, with the Pacers' pace of play, they like to, you know, kind of speed you up and get into a up and down type game.
Yeah, I think the Pacers are hoping and believing that they can turn the Knicks over pretty regularly here by speeding them up, by throwing extra bodies at them. I mean, the Pacers have got some really good defensive people out there, you know, that they can throw and they can switch. Nesmith and Nembhard and these guys, Halliburton, they can do that to you. And you saw the Knicks get sped up. The weird part is I think the Pacers need to be more physical from the outset, because generally the more physical team will get the benefit of the whistle. It's just the way it works, right? And I think the Knicks are used to getting, you know, we talked about, you guys were mentioning your Emmys and stuff. Well, you know, DiVincenzo got a Tony for that, you know, that pick at the end there. The Pacers should be speeding the Knicks up. They should be taking advantage of turnovers. And I think that's how they, in their dream, that's how they get this series.
You know, the Knicks bench gave them next to nothing on Monday night, only 3 points, whereas, you know, Indiana, 46 points, you know, TJ McConnell, Obi Toppin, you know, double figures. So you would think that they would have had more of a closing kick than the Knicks did. I mean, given that they didn't play as many minutes, but down the stretch, it seemed that, you know, the Knicks were more aggressive. They seemed to have more energy. And I think this, I mean, Rick Carlisle's probably, well, if he had any hair, he'd be pulling it out at this point. Mm-hmm. Because really, this was a game that Indiana, it was just right there for them. And if they lose this series, they're going to look at this and they're going to say, we really blew it in the first game.
I'd agree. But that's, I'm not so much concerned about the Knicks bench scoring because they don't play their bench much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Knicks are going to put the ball in Brunson's hands, and they're going to hope to get, you know, someone freed up. Look, Josh Hart, when he got to the Knicks last year, I said that to me was, it was a little bit under the radar, but I thought that's a huge pickup for them because he's one of those guys that can, you know, he fills in spaces really well. And, you know, we saw that tonight, but the Knicks aren't going to use their bench much. Just not. It's not a Thibodeau thing. He's going to ride his guys. It's up to the Pacers to make that an issue, to be working those guys, to be extending defense like they did quite a bit. But, you know, I'd expect to see a couple of backcourt eight-second violations as we go forward here. But that's got to happen. The Pacers can't be worried about maybe giving up an easy bucket here or there on those kind of things, because sometimes you've got to, you know, it's like a loss leader, do one of those, couple of those things to create the pace that you need.
Hey, Steve, I one of the things I was really impressed about, I guess, from the Pacer standpoint, is they picked the Knicks up full court the entire game. They really put the pressure on them, and probably everything we've been talking about, their advantage athletically, their advantage in depth, probably played a factor in, you know, this game plan or whatever. Do you see that being, this wasn't a one-time thing. This wasn't game one, right? We should see this the entire series and force the five Knicks players, all of whom played 30, you know, four of them played 40 minutes to eventually wear down. Eventually you're going to get them worn down, even though every time you think that, it doesn't happen to the Knicks. But I thought the full court, you know, pickup was really you don't see that very often anymore, and that was a real big part of their success tonight.
I've got to believe that the Pacers looked at it of, as, look, this is what we're going to do, and it'll pay dividends in this series at some point. Getting tonight would have been ice cream for them. You know, I think this was the one game that, hey, you know, if it's not going to have an effect, it won't have an effect in this game, perhaps. You know, and it was there for them. So this would have been a stealing a game, so to speak, a bit for the Pacers. But they have to believe that what they're trying to do, again, extending defense, all those things, is going to pay dividends down the line.
All right. And Steve, I had a quick question here. Of course, it's a fascinating story for at least journalism here. But with the Toronto Raptors having tore down the house, obviously the tipping point was Fred VanVleet signing with the Rockets this past offseason. And then we saw two big trades that they were involved with this year. Two of those guys on the move are, you know, coincidentally ending up in this playoff series, matching up against one another, OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam. I'd be curious to get your take, who you could see of those two former Raptors paying the biggest dividends for their team in this series.
Well, I would think Siakam, because he's going to be, if the ball moves more with the Pacers, so he's got a chance to get more touches, etc. But Anunoby, if he steps up defensively, I think he can, you know, because he might be in the light a little bit more, it might look that way. He might be able to have an impact more than you'd think. But it's funny. It's like these guys went, they were like mainstays with Toronto. I mean, everything you've got to look at when you're judging players, to me, and I find this crazy that people look at a guy like the Celtics acquired Kristaps Porzingis this year. And the line was, well, he's no good, he's this, he's that. It's like you have to look at every player in context. If Kristaps Porzingis is your best player or your second best player, probably not that great a team. If he's your third or fourth option, life is good. Yeah. And, you know, Anunoby and Siakam were like mainstays of that club up there. And now they come here and they're playing a role. So, you know, to whom much is given, much is expected. Not a whole lot's expected from them. Probably the better example for what I've been trying to mumble here is Aaron Gordon, right? You know, he is the face of the franchise in Orlando, but he goes to Denver, and you know, life is good, right? He's you know, he gets to kind of live in the shadows a little bit and make his plays and not feel like he's letting the world down, the franchise down, if he misses two shots in a row.
Okay, real quick. We're going to go around the horn real quick. One-word answer. Who do we have in game two? I got the Knicks.
I'll go ahead and take the Knicks as well. I think they're going to watch the tape and certainly clean things up and make it a much bigger differential in game two.
I'm going to take the Knicks, obviously, as the resident Knicks fan here. But I do believe the Pacers have a good game plan to take a game in the Garden at some point, which they'll have to do.
I'm taking the Bears. No, I just you're going around the horn like this is just like the superfans thing. I'll go with Indiana.
All right. Got it. Opposing the theory. I like that. Yeah, I like that, Steve. All right. Well, the next series we certainly want to focus on in the Eastern Conference is the Cavaliers-Celtics series. And game one is going to be coming up here as this one gets released here on the airwaves. And Steve, of course, this is an interesting matchup because the Cavaliers do have the size to maybe disrupt some of the advantages that Porzingis, as you mentioned earlier, kind of brings to Boston. I mean, they got a guy in Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, two elite defenders that can play out on the perimeter. How do you think the Cavs can fare against Boston? Will they put up any type of struggle to the Celtics just cruising through this round?
Well, first of all, I don't think they're going to have to worry about Porzingis. He's not going to be there. I don't think he plays this series. I'd be surprised. Maybe if it gets to a 6 or 7, which is possible, certainly. Yeah. But I don't think he's going to be an issue for them. look, this will come down to Boston keeping its head. You know, I think we've discussed this before. I'm betting we did because it's been the issue for them. They got knocked out in 18, 19, 20. 21 was a little bit weird, but 22 finals and last year for the same reason. They would fall into hero ball at the end of games. You saw it a couple times this year, and people were duly frightened around the team when they saw that. But you're seeing less in these playoffs of Jason Tatum bringing the ball up the floor, which is big, that he doesn't do that. You're seeing more Jrue Holiday and Derek White bringing the ball up, setting them in their offense, getting things going that way there. You'd want, if you're the Celtics, you want the ball in Jason Tatum's hands, certainly Jaylen Brown as well, but Tatum's hands as much as possible, but as a finisher. Okay. You know, these several dribbles into a double team, not the way that they need to go. So I think the Cavaliers, they've got the ability with their size, like you said, to get some offensive rebound, get some putbacks and things like that. But the key to beating Boston is getting Boston flustered. And it's happened before with the moves they've made. Derek White's ascendancy, but Jrue Holiday's presence, I think that's less likely to happen this season, but it's still a possibility. It's still out there. And it's hard to really judge the Celtics based on the first round series because that wasn't even the Heat they were playing, right? That was, you know, taking – you took away Butler and Rozier and Josh Richardson – wasn't Miami Heat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that first round series didn't really provide any kind of a test for Boston, really. I believe that the guard play for Boston is probably going to decide the series. I mean, look, if you can stop Donovan Mitchell from dropping 40 points on you, you can disrupt Darius Garland's rhythm a little bit. And he hasn't really been scoring in the playoffs. He's been more kind of, you know, ball handling. You know, with White and Holiday, I like to call those guys the wardens because they lock people up, and I think they're gonna provide a lot of resistance to Donovan Mitchell. So somebody else is gonna have to beat them. And again, is Max Strus capable of being that guy? I mean, George Niang, who shot about 6% in the first round, I mean, was just awful. And you mentioned Tatum, you know, being a closer. He was their third leading scorer against Miami. Now, granted, some of the games were blowouts, but Brown averaged 22-8, White averaged 22-4, Tatum averaged 21-8, and had a lot of, you know, hockey assists. So he was really facilitating a lot, and I think that's good news for Boston.
I think it's huge news for Boston because he's not – well, you saw it in a couple spots during the series where he kind of tried to force things and get his numbers going. But, yeah, I mean, look, no matter what Jason Tatum does, he's going to get attention from the opponent, right? And, you know, there'll be an extra body coming toward him when he goes to the dribble, et cetera. You know, maybe not a direct double team, but certainly there'll be guys hedging that way. If his next move in the, you know, on the superstardom path is to recognize those situations and then burn the opponent. And then again, not try to force, let the offense happen. When the Celtics move the ball, and I've had coaches and GMs talking all year, basically people believe they're kind of unguardable if they're moving the basketball because you're going to be a step slow, and they've got, you know, they're going to put five scorers on the floor. So, yeah, I think that's – it's good news that for the Celtics anyway, that if Tatum understands that, understands the situation, and accepts the fact that, you know, I don't got to be the lead scorer. You know, I've got a bunch of accolades. I've got this and I've got that. I don't have jewelry.
I see. I'm one of the – I don't know if I'm one of the few in this group here, but I don't consider it as much of a series. I think the team, unless the Cavaliers somehow step up their offense, I don't see it as being much of a series. Basically, they're going to face a better defensive team than they played in Orlando, who was pretty good to begin with. But what you mentioned before, the Celtics down the stretch or whatever, and I brought this up in our podcast before. One of the things that it may not factor in this series, but going forward, deeper in the playoffs, they, some whatever reason, slowed the pace down considerably in the fourth quarter. Their possessions for 48 minutes or whatever in the fourth quarter is the worst in the league. And it was the worst in the first round in the fourth quarter again. It didn't matter. Obviously, most of the time it doesn't matter because they have such a commanding lead. They were the dominant team in the league this year. But is that something – am I just reaching for something to try and figure out reasons not to like the Celtics going forward if they can't play at at least the same pace that they played during the regular season or during the first three quarters? We saw it in the Miami – in the what game was it? Was it my second game they had a big lead and almost let it get away, and they just kept against Miami? Miami, Boston had a big lead. Was it game two?
Or was it game one? Game one. It was game one.
Okay.
Miami had a game where game two and won that one.
Okay. Yeah. That's right. All right. That's right. Okay. So is that something, am I reaching on something like that, or is that a fair criticism for lack of a better
word? I'd say like a half and half on that. I'll give you a half and half, or I believe it's a half and half. I think a lot of times this year with this team, they were protecting leads. Now, you don't want to take the air out of the ball entirely, but, you know, you look at their scoring margin and their fourth quarter leads. I believe they've had like the most 20-point leads, 30-point leads, whatever. Like it's pretty crazy what they've done. So that kind of makes it a little bit weird to judge. But when you look at their track record for having slowed the ball down, I mean, let's go back to the 2022 finals against Golden State, and you had Jason Tatum bringing the ball up against pressure. And that was, you talk to the Warrior people that summer, and they were like, that was the series. You know, they got into Boston like that, and Tatum tried to make plays anyway, and they took the gas out of him as well during those situations. So maybe not as huge a concern this year. Maybe the numbers are a little bit skewed by the fact that they had these large leads, but their history tells you that, you know, I have this recollection of them screwing up in this manner by trying to play ISO ball down the stretch in important games. So I think you're right to look at that as, okay, here's a bell that has rung in the past and could be a factor again.
All right. So this question is for Coach Ross, as our resident former assistant coach here. Boston hasn't played a game since May 1st. Okay. Mm-hmm. Miami is in their every other day rhythm. Not Miami. Cleveland's in their every other day rhythm at this point. Played Sunday, going to play Tuesday. Is there any concern on your part that Boston might come out a little bit flat in game one because they got a little bit of the too much rest type of thing? Or are you discounting that?
I'm discounting it with a team like this that's been experienced playing playoff caliber basketball at the highest level, having a target on their back the last couple of years, being one of the best teams in the NBA. I think they know what to expect, what's up ahead of them. And certainly with Porzingis being out, you know, they can't take any team lightly, because that was one of their major advantages throughout the regular season, was having a guy like KP. So I think they're going to come out just fine in game one. As Steve pointed out, I mean, the way that the Celtics move the basketball on the offensive end, I could see Cleveland being even a step slow, maybe even a little bit tired, since Orlando did a great job, you know, pushing that one to seven and had a chance to win seven. So Cavs had to work really hard in that first round series. And I think the rest for Boston is actually a blessing in disguise rather than a concern of mine.
Bruce, I could totally see what you're talking about happening.
Okay.
But here's the thing.
Tell me more.
The Celtics get in trouble when they expect things to happen. And as we, you know, look, the last Celtic championship, the Pierce, Garnett, Ray Allen team went 7 games in the first round against the Atlanta Hawks, who finished 28 games behind them. So stuff can happen. But if I'm coaching, and I'd do it for just the per diem, I would just, you know, I'll take that. If I'm coaching the Celtics to combat that, to try to set tone, I pick up full court to start that game. Look, here's what we're going to do, guys. And if they beat your pressure defense and burn your butt a couple times, well, you know, work harder. So, I think that could be an issue. And look, something I probably should have mentioned in Michael's question prior. The criticism with the Celtics this year, we'll talk about, you know, sure, the end of game situations are there. But I've had coaches telling me that the one thing that they mess up on, that Boston could, it could be their Achilles heel, is that they're so caught up in trying to execute, and they're hunting mismatches all the time. And it's like, no, dudes, you're fine. Just keep moving the ball. The mismatches will find you instead of hunting them. And they can kind of bog themselves down that way. And maybe that's what happens in the fourth quarter a little bit, Michael. World. That it kind of can get in the way. So, yeah, Boston, create pace. And I think the best way to do that is by extending defense. And, Porzingis is really good at playing free safety on those situations. But Horford can do that. And, you know, I could even see, even though he might have a size issue, you know, the Celtics going even deeper into their bench this series.
All right, Steve, before we get to a break here, just a quick question then. How long do you see this series going? I'm assuming you got the Celtics, but in how many games?
The Celtics should take it in 4 or 5. I think it could be 6 easily. I don't discount their, you know, if they win this in 4 or 5, then they'd really be showing me something that they really have taken a step. Like we talked about earlier, it's kind of hard to see that in a Miami series because of the Heat situation. But if they stick to business and get this done early, then that would speak loudly about them and their growth.
All right. And as we get to our second half here, of course, turning our attention to the Western Conference, let's start out with the Mavericks Thunder game one preview and get your series thoughts on that, Steve. Of course, this should be an interesting matchup. Of course, the strong guard play of the Dallas Mavericks with their two-headed monster of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. And then you got a team like Oklahoma City that can pretty much switch anything on the perimeter. And of course, have a closer in SGA themselves, one of the top closers in the league that can definitely rival the play of Kyrie and Luka down the stretch. So what are you most looking forward to in this series? What kind of stands out of what you're looking to see with this matchup?
I got to tell you, I'm kind of disappointed in this podcast. I mean, we get to halftime. Shouldn't we have a break for the lady on the unicycle with the bowls? You know, shouldn't this be panda time?
Yeah, we don't have Red Panda, unfortunately. We got some automated ads that'll get filtered in there.
Bruce, you gotta get the budget, dude. You gotta get the panda here.
Yeah. I told the boss at Believe to watch tonight, you know, because we were gonna have you on. So hopefully he'll get the message and cough up some dough.
Yeah, that's it. Damn it. Yeah. So again, you're talking about the Dallas and
Thunder matchup.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of a test case for human relationships, isn't it? I mean, if you know the next step in the Luka Kyrie relationship, you know, that to me is running a close second to the Taylor Swift Kelsey relationship here in terms of people want to know about it. I think, again, if the Thunder sticks to what it can do and believes in itself and believes in what it's doing and doesn't pause and doesn't get crazy when Luka throws a couple of threes up from of the logo in not the logo on the floor, but the one in the parking lot. if they can keep their head and stick to their game and keep moving and keep putting the pressure on Dallas, that's doable. The Dallas has gotten better defensively, which it didn't. They were so bad that anything would have been better. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Oak City, again, forgets the fact that it's too young and just keeps balling. I think that could be a really interesting series.
Hey, Steve, I've mentioned on this podcast how I like the Thunder just because they're, along with the Celtics, the best all-around team in terms of where they rank offensively and defensively. I think they're top five in both, and only Boston is right up there among that group. What impresses you more about the Thunder, their offense or their defense?
I'd say kind of a Weasley way around your question, but I think it's their offense that comes from their defense.
It's a good answer. I like that.
You know, I think because a young team, and even you see with the Celtics who are, you know, experienced in all this, a few blank possessions in a row and there's deflation at the other end of the floor. And I think the Thunder, they've done a really good job of avoiding that pitfall. And it's a little bit different in the playoffs, isn't it? Because there tend to be fewer possessions. And against a team like Dallas, which will, you know, bleed the clock some on you, or a lot on you, you know, that's going to be important for them to not forget who they are if they have a couple of bad possessions.
My concern with OKC all season long has been their rebounding, okay? They're not a good rebounding team. You know, Holmgren is really their only, like, you know, legit, like, real big. And OKC also turns the ball over more than Dallas. So I think, you know, we really got to keep our eye on the rebounding numbers, and we got to keep our eye on the turnovers. And really, Holmgren is going to have to outplay that two-headed Gafford Lively monster and not get worn down, because Chet is not like the most, you know, imposing physical guy. I could see him getting pushed around a little bit. And if that happens, then I think that could really, you know, along with the great guard play, you know, from Kyrie and Luka, I could see OKC being vulnerable in this series, not necessarily predicting they're going to lose. But I mean, you would think, you know, Dallas has some craftiness that they can bring to the table here.
Yeah, there are some parallels, I think, between this series and the New York-Indiana series, right? If Oak City can keep up the pace and avoid it being a, you know, a two-minute game at the end, if they can avoid that, that's to their advantage. Because you don't want to get in that kind of game. As strange as he is, Kyrie Irving is incredible, especially in those situations. And Luka, you know, I think he was born without a conscience, which has made him a great player. You know, it's going up, and he believes it's going in, even though I think he pretty well challenges the laws of physics on quite a bit of his offense.
Now for the series, I'll go first here. I've got the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think Chet actually is going to make it real difficult on those two-headed monsters down low, Bruce and Lively and Gafford. He's going to pull them out to the perimeter, opening up driving lanes for J-Dub and SGA. They're going to be flying around the court. And Derek Jones Jr. is really the only impressive defender on the Dallas Mavericks, if you ask me, from watching that first round series against the Clippers. So I've got the Thunder in this one, but Bruce, who do you have?
I'm going to go with the Thunder, but I mean, it's going to take them seven.
World?
I have Dallas. I think Dallas's defense, and is, as Steve mentioned, is much improved since the midway through the season, really. It wasn't just a season-long thing. They got better, you know, suddenly, and their world became better. And I think that you have the two best closers in the league, arguably, and Luka and Kyrie, and I think that's just too tough a matchup for one team to deal with.
Steve?
I'm not sure this is – God, I'm not sure that Oak City is ready yet. And I think that they can get bopped in the head a couple times here, and that would make it a Dallas series to win. And I'd almost say that Dallas will steal the series. You know, I mean, that's because I don't think that – I think the way I usually look at anything – because I think it's ridiculous to try to predict what's going to happen because there's so many things that can play into it, right? But usually I want to look at a series and say, okay, if each team plays to its max, who wins? In that case, Oklahoma City wins the series. I just think that, you know, weird things will happen. I have that weird feeling.
All right, and as we shift gears here to the other series going on as of taping here tonight, that is the Minnesota Timberwolves and Denver Nuggets, currently in game two. But, wow, game one was quite a surprise there as Anthony Edwards caught fire, and Minnesota took home game one with the win, 106-99 on the road. Steve, first question for you, is Minnesota just catching fire at the right time? I feel like everything's starting to connect. We saw it in the Phoenix series. The chemistry coming together. The post-game interviews were impressive, if you ask me, with Anthony Edwards giving credit to his teammates. It just seems like a lot is clicking with Minnesota right now. And do you think they have a chance to knock off the defending world champions?
Yeah, I think as better health has been huge for Minnesota, so has the question of health with Jamal Murray become an issue with Denver, right?
Very true.
Denver, to me, I just love their team because they know who they are better than most teams I've seen going way back even. Like, this is what we do. We know who we are. We don't try to be who we're not. Our guys know their roles. Our guys accept their roles. They – different players, different people in different spots – but they have, to me, a San Antonio vibe from a few years ago where guys just know this is our identity and we're not going to try to put on a mask and be something else. So I would never discount Denver, but if the Jamal Murray thing is a problem for them, because that two-man game up top that kind of starts their wheel turning, you know, bodies start moving and then the guy we mentioned earlier, Aaron Gordon, comes sneaking in from the, you know, from the parking lot, and you know, there's the dunk. That could be the thing, but I think it's just fun to watch good teams, young teams on the rise, and you know, that team had issues last year when it tried to bring Gobert and Cat together, but you see the something that got you mentioned about. Anthony Edwards in post-game interviews, you know, bringing together guys like that, that's huge. That's the kind of team building stuff that I think you can say it's a little cheesy, but I think it matters.
You know, so as we're recording this, the game two of the Timberwolves Nuggets is late in the second quarter, and Minnesota is leading by 24 points. It is 54-30. Karl-Anthony Towns is absolutely dominating the Joker, who's a minus 13 so far. And you mentioned Jamal Murray a moment ago. He's 1-for-9 right now from the field. So, you know, obviously that's a problem. I had felt that actually Denver could lose the first two games at home, and I would not say that they're out of the series. But boy, oh boy, I mean, Minnesota has just opened up a can on them in the first half of game two. And I don't know how many people would have predicted that, World Be Free.
I would venture to say nobody would. who would have thought you'd go into defending champions after they just put away LeBron and in five games and lose two at home. Who would expect that? But you know, you guys know I've in the preseason, this was the Timberwolves were my surprise team at the Western Conference, and certainly right now I'm surprised at how they're doing. But you know, it's all about their defense. We talked. I've mentioned it before. They have not just the best defense in the league. They have the best defense by far. Boston's number two, and there's a wide gap in terms of efficiency and points per possession. There's a wide gap between them. So they've really dominated that end. And now you have this is the coming out party for Anthony Edwards. It was, you know, we saw it in the first round. We've seen it develop in his career. And what a better place to do it than, you know, potentially beat the defending champs and advance your team and yourself into the limelight. He's already being compared to, you know, on social media, take it for what it's worth. You know, he's being put into, you know, the category of Kobe and Jordan at this young age. And you keep putting 40 plus in defending champ's backyard, it suddenly becomes worthy of comparison.
Well, if you had them as your surprise team this year, I got my question for you is, do you do stock tips?
Everybody took all the good surprise teams. I was left with Minnesota. First of all, I didn't predict up 1-0 and up 20 plus in game two on defending champ, so I won't go that far. That being said, I thought the trio of Towns and Gobert and Edwards really had nowhere to go but up from. It was really almost a disaster last year. It could only get better. They weren't going anywhere, so they were stuck together, so they had to get better, and they really did. They became the best defensive team in the league.
That did look like a horrible trade early on last year when those guys just couldn't figure out how to be on the floor or even in the same area code together, it seemed like. But putting a bunch of athletic people around them kind of seemed to help it along as well, right?
Naz Reid.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, they've got other bodies that go in and, you know, look, Denver, how much did guys like Bruce Brown help last year? And, you know, and they've got guys that stepped into those roles. I thought they were going to take a hit, Denver, but, you know, they had other guys that filled in those roles and it stayed good for them. But yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about Murray's situation. Cause I think, you know, their offense starts with those two guys, right? You know, the high pick and roll, and there they go. And, you know, the gears start turning. But if that's going to be a problem, then, yeah, Denver's in trouble.
Yep. And, of course, we've gotten a hint into how game two is going. So the series is 1-0 with a large lead for Minnesota as we near the end of the first half. So, Steve, I'll start with you on this one. Who do you have for the series, knowing what we know right now?
Well, math tells you Minnesota. You're not gonna punt on that one. But I like Bruce's idea that Denver could still make it a series. But I beating an injured horse here, I'm going back to the Jamal Murray issue and saying if he's can be healthy, then that changes things because that puts a lot more pressure on the Minnesota defense. Again, not just his scoring, but his ability to start the offense and get guys in their spots and create the kind of spacing.
All right, Bruce, who do you got?
Never underestimate the heart of a champion, said Rudy Tomjanovich in one of the all-time great quotes when he was talking about the 1995 Houston Rockets. So I'm still going to give Denver the nod. But look, I mean, they need to come back and at least make game two close for me to truly believe that that's going to happen. If they just get rolled in game two, the momentum might be too much for them to overcome. But I'm still going to stick with Denver, but in seven.
All right, world.
Heck, if this keeps up the way it's going, it'll be Minnesota in three. Never mind four. I mean, geez, 28-point lead late in the first half. That's unbelievable. In your defending champ's backyard, I'll take Minnesota. I don't mind taking Minnesota with a 2-0 lead. I'll and 3 at home to win the series. Here's the thing, too, guys. That series against the Lakers, you know, they won in 5, and that's fine. They, you know, they get credit for that. But it's not like they dominated the Lakers. They had to make a couple of nice runs in order. They weren't playing all that great in that first round. They played good in enough spurts, and they dominated. But they weren't exactly at peak form from what we saw in the second half of the season like we saw from them. So this isn't a 28-point lead is a surprise. Going down 2-0 at home is a surprise. But the way they're playing, Minnesota having the lead is not the biggest surprise of all time.
No doubt about it. And let's go ahead and get to some quick hitters here for you, Steve. And first one up here is the future of LA basketball, as both the Clippers and the Lakers were round one exits, along with Darvin Ham of the Lakers also being dismissed from the Lake Show as their head coach. So obviously the Clippers are moving into a new building, but Paul George could potentially walk away from the franchise and go elsewhere. And then with the Lakers, I mean, LeBron didn't want to comment on his future with the team after their elimination game. So just what's your thought on everything going on in the City of Angels? And do you expect a lot of big changes before next season?
Well, you want to start with the Lakers?
Yeah, let's go ahead and start with the main team in town, the Lakers.
Yeah. When Ham got fired, like pretty short order, 3 calls from NBA people who were very upset, angry, pissed that Ham got Darvin Ham got let go. And they were most of the, 2 of the 3 were clearly laying it at the feet of LeBron, basically saying if LeBron wanted him there, he'd be there. And I think that situation, they're just rolling through head coaches and it's crazy. Did the Lakers underachieve this year for what they were roster wise, et cetera? I don't think so. You know, losing to Denver, did they think that the winning the in-season tournament made them the title favorites in the champion? I don't think so. And I just thought that was a really weak way to deal with Darvin Ham. Sometimes when the players get a little pissy with the head coach and stuff, it's important for management to come down to the locker room and say, look, he's here. He's staying. Are you? We'll decide about you later, but he's staying. And I think once, if you can establish that, and guys, like we talked about earlier with Minnesota, right? Once they realize we're here, we got to live together. Let's figure this out. Then they perhaps they will. But, you know, you look at all the issues and all the drama that the Lakers had, D'Lo and this and that. And, you know, it's crazy to me. I just, you know, how that team functions, whether it functions. Does the big guy want to play? Because when he does, you know, he's huge. He gives LeBron perhaps the best guy he's ever played with. Perhaps, you know, you can talk about Dwayne Wade or whatever, but Anthony Davis, man, that's, you know, but is AD going to be there all the time for you? And do you have enough around there to play the defense and to keep the floor spread enough? You know, that's a team I looked at as, were they good enough to make it a 2-minute game and then win a 2-minute game? Certainly they were good enough. They're good enough to win a 2-minute game if you've got LeBron, right?
Yep.
My question would be, can they consistently play the kind of ball all around the entire 48 or the 46 to make it a 2-minute game? And they just kind of go in and out, and they rely so heavily on a guy that's what, like 3 years from Social Security?
Yeah.
That's hard. That's harsh.
Yeah. And right around the block now would be the Clippers with their opening of the new arena. What's your thoughts on everything that kind of transpired with their season? Obviously, they acquired James Harden, now have some off-season things to kind of figure out. And of course, will Kawhi ever be healthy? I mean, it just seems like there's so many questions for Steve Ballmer and the Clippers, even as they head into their own arena with their own brand moving forward. But just what's your take on the Clippers with everything going on with them?
It just occurred to me, I met one of the people that was doing the architecture group that was doing the new arena last summer. We talked about it. And he was saying how Ballmer wanted it to be a touchless experience, you know, for everybody. It's all going to be electronic, how you pay for things, whatever. And I think there were too many times this year where the touchless thing, the players tried it out. The ball wasn't getting where it should be enough, and defensively they weren't where they should be as much. And look, their thing is going to be, has been, and will continue to be, as long as that group, as long as that core stays together, it'll be a question of health.
Yeah.
A healthy Kawhi Leonard, I think people have forgotten just how freaking good Kawhi Leonard is. He showed it at times this year, but given reasonable health, he was going to go into playoff series being the best player on the court. I think would surprise people how much that would happen, just how good this guy is. But it wasn't there for them. And then, you know, the stuff around them fell apart. Harden showed up, not in shape, got in shape, was playing the role really well. But then, you know, when the injury things happened, particularly Kawhi, things started to fall apart when guys tried to, well, I need to do a little bit more. Well, maybe you do, but it screws up what you had. So, you know, there's a team that you thought with what it had for players was probably going to go a little bit further, right? So they had more expectation perhaps than the Lakers did, but Darvin Ham's gone and Ty Lue is, you know, the hot commodity team, like the Lakers would try to get him. And I'm a big Ty Lue fan, but it's just kind of strange how perception works.
I see both of these teams not with great futures, okay? You know, J.J. Redick has a very good chance of becoming the next head coach of the Lakers because, you know, he does a podcast with LeBron now, right? So he's going to be like LeBron's flavor of the month. Well, we saw how well former ESPN announcer Doc Rivers did in his stint in Milwaukee. Granted, injuries crushed him and all that. I get all that. But even before all that, his record wasn't as good as Adrian Griffin's was, for what that's worth. Okay. So I'm not buying Lakers stock moving forward. As for the Clippers, the new arena is going to be great for them. They're not going to be second-class citizens in the crypto, whatever you call it, Staples Center anymore. And I predict, because after hearing Pat Riley talk about Jimmy Butler on Monday and basically like smacked him around a little bit for running his mouth, I believe Steve Ballmer will probably sign Jimmy Butler to be the latest aging injured veteran to join that roster. So Jimmy Butler should be moving to the 213, as far as I'm concerned, World B.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't disagree. I think both franchises are in trouble. And there, I don't see and we haven't mentioned the fact that they're playing in a ridiculously competitive Western Conference. I mean, how are you going to move up with an aging group? They're both aging and they both have a lot of dead weight there, for lack of a better phrase. That's just how it is.
Yeah, so a lot of exciting stuff going on around the association. Be sure to check out Steve's work on heavy.com as he covers the Boston Celtics and the rest of the league. Huge storylines, huge matchups here in the playoffs. Steve, we want to thank you again for coming back on the show to discuss the NBA playoffs and everything going around the league, and really appreciate your support.
I think what Bruce just pointed out with the comment about J.J. Redick is that he needs to be doing this podcast with an important player, not us bums.
Yeah.
you know, he can find himself on a bench soon.
There we go. Yeah. Coach Bruce, I'd love to see it too. Sign me up for that. And I'm sure Bruce, like you mentioned earlier, Steve, he would do it for the per diem too. He wouldn't need a big contract, you know?
Love of the game, baby. Love of the game.
Agree, man. I overate yesterday for Easter and not pretty today. I think my stomach wrote a diss track about my fork.
Oh, man.
Not good.
Too much spanakopita, Stevie B.
Lamb. Rack of lamb and side dishes, and you don't want to know.
Attaboy. I hope you put some tzatziki on there, though. Did you put some tzatziki on your food?
No.
I've got a lot to learn. Giannis hasn't taught me much yet about the Greek culture and that kind of stuff. But I think Greek food and tzatziki. But maybe that's not a thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, no, he's you're right about that. I'm just not a big fan of, you know, the tzatziki sauce. That's, you know.
All right.
Doesn't make me a bad person, you know?
No. World,
do you like tzatziki sauce?
No, I stay out of that stuff. I'll let my wife enjoy that food. I'll stay away from it. My world's a little bit better that way.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks again, Steve, for joining us here on tonight's show.
Digression.
Yeah. Well, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.